Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, it wasn't that long ago, although it was almost 8 years ago, that George W. Bush left office, and he did not exactly leave with the highest of approval numbers. I think even all conservatives will agree to that. I think he was hovering maybe even below 30%. But according to a new poll from CNN released on Wednesday, Bush is seen in a favorable light by 52% of those surveyed, compared with 43% who still see him unfavorably. So still not a lot of undecideds there. Americans are split on President Obama, however, with 49% favorable and 49% unfavorable. So when you think back to the way those numbers were in late 2008, this presidency has made a lot of people think, you know, that W maybe not so bad after all.
There's nothing like the passage of time to kind of add a little new perspective to things. And if you had thought, oh, my goodness, can Iraq possibly get any worse than it was when he left office in January 2009? Yeah, it can. Can the Middle East get any worse? Yeah. Afghanistan? Yeah. Relationship with Russia? Yes. Could the economy? Well, like the economy is, you know, more stable than it was back in when the transition occurred from Bush to Obama. But I think it's safe to say, look, we've been through six and now it looks like 6.5 years of kind of sputtering along. Then all of a sudden you look at how things were under President George W. Bush and they don't look so bad. And the way things are under Obama is looking really bad. And so is this to say that George W. Bush didn't have some criticism coming to him? No. There were definitely mistakes made during the Bush years, both in foreign and domestic. But you look at this and you kind of feel like the perspective is kind of being recalibrated here, and accurately, that Bush is getting a fairer shake than he was for much of the immediate time after his presidency.
I'm guessing perhaps a certain former governor of Florida is liking these numbers, because perhaps his brother's legacy and just the Bush name in general isn't going to be as much of a drag on him in the primary as it might have appeared to have been just a short while ago. So we'll see if that factors in at all. Interestingly, also in this poll, CNN polled people on their views towards every living president. This Politico summary does not include the numbers on Jimmy Carter, but they say among living presidents, George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton are viewed the most favorably. Both get a 64% favorable rating, 30% unfavorable for the elder Bush, 33% negative for Clinton, which is interesting, Jim, because the same CNN pollster just came out with horrible numbers for Hillary just a day ago, but apparently Bill not touched as much at all by the Clinton Foundation sleaze.
First of all, keep in mind is that the ex-presidents are kind of safe. They can't bother you too much anymore. So on the one hand, you're going to get judged by kind of a softer measuring stick. And then the flip side of that is you got to wonder how many respondents really remember George H.W. Bush and or maybe even Clinton and certainly Jimmy Carter, right? I mean these are all, for a certain number of respondents, these are entire theoretical or stuff they've read from history books, if they ever even got to that in history class.
On to the bad martini now. And Jim, you've spent a good bit of the last few days scolding different people for their rhetoric in the NSA bulk data collection debate. It was just on Sunday that the Senate was actually in session dealing with this issue, and Rand Paul, the leader of the opposition to the ongoing NSA bulk data collection program, which did expire on Sunday, had this little doozy that he offered up in his arguments actually on the Senate floor.
People here in town think I'm making a huge mistake. Some of them, I think, secretly want there to be an attack on the United States so they can blame it on me.
So he thinks his opponents in this debate want an attack on America. On the opposite side of the debate, you've got New York Republican Congressman Peter King, who said the day of the debate, it's time for Rand Paul to stop doing Edward Snowden's work and let the Senate preserve the NSA and protect America. And then yesterday, when the Senate finally passed the USA Freedom Act, the House version of it, in fact, King tweeted out, "Today's Senate NSA vote is a victory for America, for freedom over ignorance, and defeat for ISIS, Edward Snowden, and Rand Paul." And today, this morning, on a local Washington radio station, Paul was asked to respond to that, and he said he didn't like to engage buffoonery. So, Jim, you and I both have two kids. Time for separate timeout chairs here.
You took the words out of my mouth there, Greg. You know, all right, stop it. Stop it, both of you. I will turn this car around right now. Stop it. Rand, over in that corner. Peter, over in that corner. I want both of you to think about what you've just said and done. Rand, do you really think other Republican senators are hoping for a terror attack so that they can say it's your fault? Do you really think about that? You think about that, young man. And you, Peter King, not so young man. Do you really think you should be putting Rand Paul in the same breath as ISIS? And then I'd also kind of add, Congressman, are you really the right person to run around saying this congressman is too close to this terror group? Because I kind of remember 80s and 90s. If they had that cool little brogue, you were cool with terrorists, okay? Peter King was very close to Jerry Adams and all the folks in Sinn Féin and IRA. My sense is Peter King's attitude is he is adamantly opposed to all terror groups unless they're easily confused for a retirement plan. then if you have a name like that, oh, okay, you know. So that's why he was also soft on Sepp Blatter, too. This is accounting humor, folks. I understand if you don't get it. So anyway, we have two competing values here. We have the Fourth Amendment, Americans' reasonable right to privacy and to not have unreasonable search and seizure, and just how much the government is allowed to look into our electronic communications and things we think of as private, and the need to stop terror attacks. And those are two things we want, and sometimes they're going to come into conflict there. Both of these guys are rooting for something, are trying to achieve something that's important. The problem is this kind of assumption of bad faith on the other side. I don't think Rand Paul sympathizes with ISIS one bit. And I don't think that Peter King or John McCain or Lindsey Graham or any of these guys are rooting for terror attacks just so they can say, see, I told you so. And I just kind of feel like this debate would be better if these guys could resist that impulse to say that the people who are disagreeing with them at the moment aren't just wrong, but that they have some sort of sinister secret motives.
Let's move on, speaking of terrorism, to the crazy martini now. And there was a police shooting of a person to death in Boston yesterday and an arrest in a related case. The person who was killed, his name was Usama Rahim. And a lot of folks, both in the anti-police crowd as well as the pro-Muslim crowd, saying that the police acted too harshly here, that he wasn't really a threat. But it turns out, yes, in fact, he was a threat. Here's Jeff Pagés on CBS This Morning.
We just got that confirmation minutes ago. U.S. law enforcement sources tell us the suspect arrested overnight and Usama Rahim were communicating and discussing potential attacks. Sources say Rahim, the man shot and killed on Tuesday, was allegedly influenced by ISIS in planning a knife attack before investigators moved in to question him.
And after the knife attacks, according to Fox News, they were going to behead the officers. So, Jim, this was not just some random act of police violence like the left was probably hoping.
Yeah, this has first come to my attention yesterday. I believe it was Ibrahim Rahim is his brother who runs a mosque in Boston. He had tweeted out, "Pray for my younger brother, Usama Rahim, shot 3 times in his back by Boston police, then dying. His last words, I can't breathe." You know, from that, people started, you know, forwarding that and tweeting that and discussing that. And they basically made it sound like 3 cops just decided to shoot this guy for no good reason. And, you know, we have seen incidents of police violence. I think the South Carolina case is the one that was caught on video where it was the clearest case of a police officer using deadly force for no discernible good reason in a dangerous set of circumstances, or creating the dangerous set of circumstances by treating the situation the way he did. You had to wonder, though, would three Boston police officers just shoot a guy for no reason in the middle of the day in broad daylight, presumably with people around? And now we're finding no, in fact, that the FBI and Boston police believe they very much had good reason to think this guy was a danger. And what's more, they're releasing the video. So if they're releasing the video, that's generally a sign they're pretty confident about what their guys did. The idea that, oh my, this is just an innocent Muslim man who just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and the police are reacting in this racist, xenophobic, knee-jerk way, not so clear as the initial progressive narrative would have us believe. And so obviously I hope we continue to get to the bottom of this. Somebody else was arrested in Boston. But it just kind of illustrates something, I think, about how much people hear about something and shoehorn it into a particular narrative that they like, i.e. bad police people and poor innocent Muslims being harassed, when that the facts do not necessarily fit that. And let's face it, the odds of I guess there are some people who are just inclined to believe the worst of the police, whereas I think there are some people who are, fairly or not, much more likely to believe that if you get into an altercation with police, the possibility you've done something bad is not unthinkable. We will see how this shakes out. But you can kind of see that there was this like near miss narrative creation here that's not being borne out by the facts.
Yeah, and a possible pretty nice chaser here is that, according to Pegay's report, also it appears that after the Garland, Texas incident, the FBI has ordered different quasi-cold cases to be reopened about potential terrorist threats in different parts of the country. And the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force has been working with local authorities on some of these threats. And, Jim, it's kind of nice to see that when the FBI is on the ball, the Boston police can run with that information pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah. You know, last Martini King and Rand Paul are still sniping at each other, though. So both insisting that this proves the other one was right, or that they were right and the other one was wrong.
Not just separate chairs, separate rooms, maybe separate floors of the house.
That's it. We're turning this car around right now. No dessert.
No dessert. Go to your rooms. Oh, fun times. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.